AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing through topics every single week and jamming you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are back with another UFC event. They just keep on rolling. We do have a break for Labor Day weekend, and then I think it's all cylinders go until Thanksgiving week, Thanksgiving, whatever that is, the weekend of Thanksgiving. I think it's the last time we don't have UFC events for the foreseeable future after Labor Day, but this weekend is UFC Shanghai. Prelims start, I think, at like 2 in the morning Central Time, 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. for me Central Time, and I'm actually working the Minnesota State Fair this year, which means we are going to literally get home at midnight or something, go to bed, wake up at maybe 6 or 7, not trying to make that joke, but just did, and get right to watching the fight, so that's going to be exciting. And on today's episode, we will be previewing and predicting every single matchup on UFC Shanghai. Also going to be recapping Dana White's Contender Series just went down, episode 2 of Season 9, and we're going to discuss each and every one of the fights, including 5 new contracts given out to some new fighters, which is very exciting. We also have some updated rankings, some new UFC fights, and I even have a special movie review of the movie Beautiful Boy. It was quite the film, and I figured I might as well share my thoughts. But yeah, without further ado, got a lot of fun stuff on today's episode, so there's no point in waiting. Let's just get right on into it with some new UFC fights. And since we only have 3, I'm also going to combine the updated rankings, since a lot of stuff happened in the UFC rankings, and it's some really, really big changes took place. So first off, 3 massive fights today announced by Dana White. First up, UFC Rio going down October 11th. Bantamweight action as the number 5 ranked Deiveson Figueiredo will be taking on the number 15th ranked Montel Jackson. Not even the co-main event. All right, this card is so massive. It is so massive. Deiveson Figueiredo, Montel Jackson is a regular main card matchup. Not even co-main, not even main event. But Figueiredo back in action. Love to see it. Kind of on the rough end of things. But to be fair, his losses are Petr Yan and Corey Sandhagen, which isn't too bad. And we have been waiting to see Montel Jackson for so long. I don't even know what his win streak is anymore. He's 15-2 professionally, 9-2 in the UFC. Think his last win was Damon Blackshear. Might have been Daniel Marcos. I genuinely cannot remember. It's been so long since we have seen our boy Montel Jackson, but this is a great contest. This is similar to Marcus McGee and Petr Yan. I do give Montel Jackson an excellent chance of beating Deiveson Figueiredo, but you never know. You never know. The God of War, Deiveson, is just Deus de Guerra, the nickname. He's just so good. And it's kind of hard to judge his losses, which is a unanimous decision loss to Petr Yan, and then an injury loss to Corey Sandhagen. Which, mind you, he was getting dominated in that Sandhagen fight, but nonetheless did get injured. So that fight is going down at UFC Rio de Janeiro, October 11th, which is going to be one of the best cards of the year. Next up, one of the main card fights and our main event for UFC Vancouver going down the following weekend, October 18th, have been announced, and the Trailblazer is back in action. The number 15th ranked welterweight Kevin Holland takes on Mike Mel. Kevin Holland is the greatest workhorse I think I have ever seen in the UFC. I mean, this guy, is this his 5th fight? He fought Rainer de Ritter, then he fought Gunnar Nelson, then he fought Vicente Luque, then he fought Daniel Rodriguez. This is fight number 5 for Kevin Holland. He's taking on an absolute heater in Mike Mallett. Yeah, this one's going to be good. Mike is coming off a win over, I think, Charles Radke he knocked out earlier this year. And as for Kevin, he unfortunately lost the matchup to Daniel Rodriguez at UFC 318, but it's Kevin frickin' Holland. This is a tough matchup. All right, this is really tough because we've seen Mike Mallett's ceiling is Neil Magny, but for Kevin Holland, it's unpredictable what you're going to get. So this is a fantastic fight. It's going to be a banger, and it's not even the main event for UFC Vancouver because the official main event for UFC Vancouver, 5 rounds, middleweight division, the number 5 ranked Rainer de Ritter takes on the number 6 ranked Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, a title eliminator a title eliminator of sorts. The UFC has basically said Nazarbayev versus Kyle Barallo and Rare Day versus Anthony Hernandez are both number one contender fights, and depending how each of those matchups go, will determine who Khamzat defends against in the first 3 months of 2026. So, massive one here. Rare Day Ritter has had an unbelievable 2025. He has submitted Kevin Holland, he has ended the undefeated streak of Bo Nickel, and he put on one of the most competitive fights in UFC history. Look at the verdict scorecard, for example, of just how close it was in against Robert Whittaker. I mean, he's been on absolute killing spree. Then there's Anthony Hernandez, who you may be surprised to see has only had two UFC fights this year, but Brendan Allen and Roman Dolidze, both great wins. The win streak, I think, is at 8. I think it's 8 by winning streak, I believe. Might be 9, actually. It's either 8 or 9, but both these guys are so deserving of a title shot. I both think they pose a great threat to Khamzat in the grappling department. I can't speak for anything else striking-wise, but this is a fantastic main event, and UFC Vancouver is absolutely blessed to have these two in the main event. But with that, those are your three new UFC fights as of the 19th of August. I'm sure we're going to be getting some more over the next week or so, especially with the November pay-per-view, the December pay-per-view, what's going to go on there. I don't know, but what I do know is the UFC had probably their biggest rankings update all year. I mean, it was an absolutely massive update. Just happened today, so let's talk about it, because a lot of things have changed in the UFC rankings. And this is basically like the main thing that you need to pay attention to in where fighters get ranked and in terms of who they're going to be taking on next. So pay attention to this. Starting off, no changes, women's bantamweight division, as literally nothing has happened. There are no good fights going down the women's bantamweight division. It is still one of the deadest divisions in the UFC. Women's flyweight division, Karine Silva moves past Miranda Maverick following her win over Dione Barbosa. I like it. Moving up to number 10 does suggest she may be fighting upwards, potentially. I don't know if she could fight upwards. Maybe Rose Namajunas. I think Rose Namajunas may be the best bet of who she could fight next. But yeah, Karine Silva moves up to number 10 over Miranda Maverick. We'll have to see how she does in her next contest. Moving on to the women's strawweight division, lots of changes. Lupi Godinez moves all the way up to number 6 following her win over Jessica Andrade, who drops down all the way to number 9. Mackenzie Dern gets a bump up to the number 5 position. Jillian Robertson down to 10, and Amanda Hibas down to 11. I like these rankings. I really do. I think when we're matchmaking, we kind of suggested that Lupi Godinez probably is going to be taking on Yan Chaonin, and I agree, that is definitely the matchup to be made. As for Mackenzie Dern, I'm feeling maybe a Yasmin Lucindo matchup. I think that is what you do there. For Andrade, I genuinely don't know. I generally don't know what you do with Andrade. Probably a rising up-and-comer. I think she needs to fight someone maybe not even in the rankings, maybe someone just on the verge, Denise Gomez, Luma Luke Boonmi, but there just isn't really anything to do with her right now. So Mackenzie Dern up to the number 5, and Lupi Godinez moving up 5 spots to number 6. Big changes there. Congratulations to Lupi Godinez. You have a top 5 opponent in your next contest. That's amazing. Women's pound for pound, no changes there whatsoever. Men's heavyweight, no changes. I don't even know the next time we're going to have changes. End of October, for goodness sakes. Oh my gosh, we have Waldo Cortez Acosta and Sergey Pavlich. I forgot we actually have a top 5 matchup going down this weekend. That's just how dead the heavyweight division is. But hopefully it can be reignited with Tom Aspinall getting more title defenses. No changes in the light heavyweight division ahead of our Zhang Mingyang and Johnny Walker main event. And we do have some big fights going down, of course. Magomed Ankalaev, Alex Pereira, Jiří Procházka, Khalil Roundtree Jr., Carlos Ulberg versus Dominic Reyes. You have Alexander Rocic versus Aslam Mirzakhanov. The division is moving. You will see some big changes over the next few months. But now, from here on out, every single division, be it bantamweight, has had some changes. So middleweight division, we have a new champion. Khamzat Chimaev is your new middleweight champion, and the render, he looks scary. Okay, he looks scary. He looks like an evil Russian villain as the new middleweight champion. His render picture is frightening. Tristis Duplessis drops down to number 1, Nazarbayev to 2, and Sean Strickland to 3. Anthony Hernandez questionably passes Kyle Barallo to move from 7 to 6. Brendan Allen moves up to number 9 as MVP debuts at number 10 in the rankings. Jared Cannonier drops 2 spots to number 11. Roman Dolidze down to 12. Paul Costa down to 13. Marvin from Vettori to 14. They bump Abus Magomedov, and Roman Kopylov remains at 15. So lots of changes. Lots of changes. So what are we going to do with everyone? Well, like I mentioned earlier, we have a title eliminator going down over the next few, 2 months. So what are we going to do after that? Well, Adesanya, Sean Strickland, they're going to be in need of opponents. I think someone out of the aftermath will be who they're going to be taking on. You also have Robert Whittaker, who's going to need to fight someone on the come up. Paulo Costa is going to be getting some action. And I think MVP coming in at number 10 is a real telltale sign that he has big fights coming up for him. I really think him versus Sean Strickland would be a super fun matchup if that were to take place, but I don't really know. All I know is Jared Cannonier is probably fighting someone outside of the rankings. You could even do Roman Kopylov versus Jared Cannonier. I think that could be fun, but Joe Pyfer, Abus Magomedov, winner of that versus Cannonier, I say we run that. And as for DDP, man, I don't even know. I think whoever doesn't get the title shot, like per se, let's say Kyle Barallo destroys Nazarene and he gets the next title shot. And let's say Anthony Hernandez beats Rainer Day Ritter. They're going to do Anthony Hernandez versus Dristis Duplessis. That's what I think is going to happen. And, other mix-ups out of that. Let's say Nazarene wins. Not impressive at all, but Rainer Day Ritter wins and it's super impressive. Then they'll do Nazarene versus Dristis while we wait for the next middleweight matchup to happen. So middleweight division was put on the spotlight this weekend and it did not disappoint. Big stuff for that division. Moving on to welterweight. Kevin Holland is now in at 15 as we've booted MVP since he is now at the number 10 middleweight in the world. Carlos Prates moves up 3 spots to number 9. I love to see that. Colby to 10, Gilbert to 11, and Jeff Neal to 12. Colby, Gilbert, and Jeff, they're part of the old breed. I don't know what they're going to do. I actually have no idea what they're going to do. They are not going to be fighting each other. I can tell you that much. But you have Gabriel Bonfim at 14. I think him versus Colby would actually be kind of a fun fight. Or if Kevin Holland beats Mike Mallett, let's do Colby Covington versus Kevin Holland. Perfect fight to make there. For Gilbert Burns, maybe if Mike Mallett wins, we do Mike Mallett, Gilbert Burns. And for Jeff Neal, how about Daniel Rodriguez? Jeff Neal, Daniel Rodriguez throwing down some Texas boys. I could get behind that. Lightweight division, fun stuff here as Paddy Pimblett moves up 2 spots to the number 7 spot, which tells me you're going to be getting some lightweight news shortly. There is no reason he just randomly moves past Matheus Cameron Benil Dariush unless he's getting a big fight. Will it be against the number 2 ranked Darman, the number 5 ranked Gaethje, the number 6 ranked Hooker? That is to be seen, but Paddy Pimblett is now ranked number 7 at lightweight. Matheus Cameron down to 8 and Benil Dariush down to 9. Matheus Cameron actually recently called out Benil Dariush for a rematch, and they haven't fought since 2022. There's not much going on. Yeah, let's just run that fight back because I actually think Matheus Cameron would win. And the one last change, Mauricio Ruffy is in at number 15 in the rankings ahead of Joel Alvarez, just departure from the rankings because of an inactivity. And Mauricio Ruffy has a big fight coming up with Benoit Saint-Denis it is. Yeah, he is taking on Benoit Saint-Denis in Paris. I actually think that's the co-main event, so makes sense he's in the rankings. Featherweight division, big changes. Leon Murphy moves 2 spots up to number 4. I would rather have him at number 3. I don't think he should be below Yair Rodriguez at all, but yes, this is your next title challenger. Not Mozafar, not Yair, but Leon Murphy. And in fact, Mozafar versus Yair should be on that same card. 3 rounds right below this, then you'll know who the winner of this will be taking on. But Leon Murphy has deserved and earned a title shot, and that is what I think he should be given. As for the men that he has passed, Brian Ortega is now ranked at number 5 ahead of his co-main event this weekend, and Arnold Allen is in at number 6. Now for Arnold Allen, he did beat Giga Chikadze, but he just hasn't fought him. And so he just hasn't done anything. So I think he's going to be taking on Yusuf Zalal. If Patricio Pitbull wins, I could see that. Or even Steve Garcia. I like the Steve Garcia-Arnold Allen fight. Just 2 boxers going down. I think that's what's going to be next. Bantamweight division, no changes like I said. Flyweight division, Tim Elliott passes Steve Ursic from 11 to 10. Tim, he's in his 30s. He's still pushing. And it's looking like he's going to get a top 10 opponent. I don't know if it should be maybe Manel Cape. Maybe Kai Kara-France, maybe Alex Perez. I don't know, but good stuff for Tim Elliott. And Charles Johnson debuts at 15 as they've kicked Kaio Sakura out of the rankings deservedly. Charles has a big fight coming up with Loner Kavanaugh this weekend. And then the final big changes, 10 spots jumped in the men's pound for pound as Hamzat Chimaev debuts at number 4. And guess who drops 7 spots? Dristis Duplessis. Crazy. absolutely crazy. That's right. Hamzat debuts at number four. People are going to be like, oh, the fact he's already ahead of Pantoa, he's past Volk and Magomed, it's ridiculous. No, it's not. Okay, Hamzat Chimaev would probably beat everyone. The only two people I question him beating are legit Magomed Ankalaev and Tom Aspinall due to their size. But other than that, he beats everyone else. He truly is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet, and I love that he's in there at number four. Just because that's seven, or dropping down seven spots to 11, it sucks, but it happens. Shavkat debuts at number 15 in the rankings, as I can't even remember who they kicked out of the rankings. It was someone. Who even was it, honestly? I haven't the slightest idea. I'm sure it'll come to me. But yeah, Shavkat in the rankings. He's still undefeated. Good for him. But yeah, those are all your new UFC updates, new UFC fights, the rankings, etc. A lot of fun stuff. It's going down. A lot of happy times, let me tell you. A lot of happy times to be a UFC fan. But I'll tell you something that isn't really happy. Something that is a lot more serious, and that is Beautiful Boy. That is right. This movie came out in 2018, directed by Felix Van Groen again. And you have probably seen clips of it as it stars Steve Carell and, oh my gosh, what is the... No, Timothée Chalamet. Oh my gosh, I was mind blanking on Timothée Chalamet. Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet star in this film as Nick Sheff. And I'm trying to say it's David Sheff. David Sheff and Nick Sheff. And Nick Sheff is played by Timothée Chalamet. And it just shows the journey of this father-son relationship as Nick, Timothée Chalamet's character, dives into addiction to crystal meth. And it is sad. You know, it's a sad movie, and it's one of those where, you know, he's thinking he's on this path to redemption, and then he falls back in, and then he keeps getting worse, and then, you know, he gives up on his son, but then eventually his son comes back, and, you know, the movie kind of ends on a happy note, but the craziest part is this is based on a 2008 memoir, okay? This is a real story brought to life, and the acting is so real. You know, I'll say Steve Carell, his range is insane, being able to portray this serious role here to then portray, you know, look at how he was in The Office. It is incredible. And this is one of the major breakout roles for Timothée Chalamet earlier in his career. This movie did come out 7 years ago, but it's fantastic. You know, it really is. 7.4 out of 10 IMDb, 68% Rotten Tomatoes. I think a 7 out of 10 is a perfect rating for this film, but it's not something you want to watch if you want to feel happy about yourself. It's really a movie that is used to show what addiction does to everyone around the addictee, and it's also how the person addicted, in this case, Timothée Chalamet's character, Nick, just cannot see that he's affecting everyone else around him. And it's called Beautiful Boy because that is what Steve Carell, you know, kept saying. You know, David, his character he's portraying, he's like, you're still my beautiful boy, you're still my beautiful boy. And it gets to a point where he just kind of is like, I can't save him. I can't save him. And he pours everything into saving his son. And it's really heartbreaking. You know, it is a heartbreaking film. And I'm just kind of glad that it ends with a happy note saying that Nick was able to get sober and him and David are back together and reunited, because I really thought he's going to die. And there's actually this part in the movie where you think he dies and you think that's how the movie's gonna end, because it's like he calls his dad and he's like, you know, dad, I need your help, and he's like, I can't help you. And then he shoots up and he, you know, passes out, ODs in a bathroom, and lo and behold, he's miraculously saved, and that finally gets him sober. So Beautiful Boy, it is a heartbreaking film, it is a film that dives into some very deep themes, but I recommend it. I just think there's a certain time to watch this on a rainy day. Maybe you make yourself some cookies and hot chocolate and you watch this film and you really learn more about what it's like to deal with addiction, you know? And plus, it's not too long. It's under 2 hours. It's like an hour 40 or something. I forgot. This movie is 2 hours and you never know where it's going. And eventually it gets to a point where the final like 40 minutes flies by. All right, I forgot that's how it goes. But Beautiful Boy, just a quick little nod to it. You guys should all go check it out. I mean, because I can't go to the movies anymore. I gotta rewatch movies that came out years ago because I've kind of got my fix of movies. But I'll tell you what I'm not getting my fix of, and that is Dana White's Contender Series, because that is not what I'm gonna be watching on Tuesdays. And season 9, episode 2 recently went down, and we had the very rare of 5 contracts given out. The record is 6. 6 contracts given out, but every single winner on today's card got a contract. So let's go through each and every one of the fights and discuss what happened. So kicking things off, we were in the men's featherweight division as Ramiro Jimenez was taking on Tommy Kuozi Jr. And 2 minutes and 53 seconds, this one did not last long. Ramiro Jimenez extends his undefeated streak to 11-0 and gets his 6th career knockout, 9th career finish. Domination from Ramiro Jimenez. 41 significant strikes to 7. It looked like he had auto lock on Tommy Kawuzi's face, or yeah, Tommy Kawuzi Jr.'s face. He was just hitting it with everything, head kicks, punches, everything, and he even dropped Tommy at one point. I thought that was the end of the fight, but Tommy was hanging in there, and thankfully, Herb Dean stepped in, called this one. I mean, it was getting bad. It was getting bad. You know, Tommy was spared his own toughness. Even the stoppage, he didn't even protest. This was domination from Ramiro Jimenez. Just such a great way to kick off this episode after such a lackluster episode one we saw last week. Ramiro Jimenez was in his bag, and we correctly predicted this on our predictions podcast last episode. And you know, he's 26 years old, undefeated from Mexico. They're gonna try and get this guy on a card in the future. Now, he's not gonna make Noche, unfortunately. Dana White said that, but he is gonna be on a future card in coming up. And you know, Ramiro Jimenez, dominant in the featherweight division, and I'm excited to see more of this kid. But yeah, great stuff from him, and it's weird to think he's only 4 years older than me, and he's an absolute killer in the UFC. For Tommy, I mean, 8-1, first career loss. This, you know, it was rough, but you could still bounce back, man. He's 25, you know, he's not even that old. There's still time. There's still time, Tommy. Maybe. I'm not going to promise anything. Next up, heavyweight division, and we need heavyweights, and we found a new one here. I don't know his ceiling whatsoever, but Josh, the Incredible Hawk, Hokit, gets it done. Round two, TKO, 1:06 into round number two, and Guillermo Arelli, his opponent, was done after round one. He wanted no part of him after round number one. This is going to be the third career knockout for Josh Hokit, and he is now 6-0 undefeated, all of his wins coming by finish. 27 significant strikes to 7 in favor of Josh, 51 total strikes to 13, and he gets 4 minutes of control time. 5 of 12 on takedowns in round number one. That was the name of the game. There was one moment where Guillermo kind of got on the feet, as you can see, 6 significant strikes there, but after it got to round two, he absolutely gassed out, gave up position, and Josh just laid into him. Good stuff for Josh, the former San Francisco 49er, and he gets the contract. And Dana White didn't say too much about him, but is like, you know what, we need heavyweights to get him in the UFC. Did cut a very weird post-press conference promo saying he was coming after rapists, sex offenders, transgenders, illegal immigrants. I don't know what he was calling out, but he was saying some wonky stuff, but it worked because Josh is now in the UFC, and I predicted he would get in, and he did. Now, what's his ceiling? I don't know, but could he hang with some of the unranked heavyweights? I'm sure he could. We'll try and get him on a card early next year, but yeah, we'll take heavyweights any way we can, and plus, getting a finish, we love finishes on this channel. Next up, bantamweight action, and this was my favorite fighter. You know, Ramiro Jimenez was probably my number two, but this was easily my favorite watching. Lewis Lee Scott, Lightning, did come in 1.5 pounds heavy, but Dana White said he'll allow an exception, as Lewis Lee Scott just is a perfect fighter. We saw takedown defense here. We saw avoiding multiple submission attempts, going for ankle locks, going for knee bars and such, and we saw some crisp boxing. And round one, you know, Kashuk Sukumar, his opponent, was really working him, okay? 1:16 of control time doesn't really just give justice to how much Kashuk was just over him. You know, he had Ryan Hall in his corner, so you already know he was going for the leg, and he actually ended the round on his back. Now, 8 significant strikes to 1, Kashuk was not throwing at all. He only landed 10 significant strikes the whole fight, but he was doing a good job controlling him. Now, round 2 comes around, 27 significant strikes to 6. You're seeing the striking of Lewis Lee Scott just dominate him. He actually landed a takedown, which we're all like, oh my gosh, why are you landing a takedown? But he did. Round 2 comes around, and you see just an explosion from him. 31 significant strikes to 3. He is throwing everything at Kashuk Sukumar. Finally, he's just hitting him with some nasty body shots, then clips him to the head a couple times in the clinch. Down he goes. Not even an official knockdown, just kind of crumbles. And Lewis Lee Scott wins in dominant fashion. The 25-year-old gets his 7th career knockout and his 9th career finish. He is now 10-0. Amazing stuff, really amazing stuff from Lewis Lee Scott. I thought he was really talented here. I thought he looked good. The bantamweight division has a fun fighter. Now, if you can't make bantamweight, I do think he would fit in at featherweight, so we'll have to see if the UFC gives him one last chance to make bantamweight, because this guy's an absolute killer. Trains at the same gym as our favorite Lerone Murphy, you know, Manchester top team. So, look, he's great. I loved him, and I thought he was one of the most entertaining to watch on this card. As for Kashyyyk Sakumar, 5-1 now. This is an unfortunate defeat for the 27-year-old from India. But, I mean, he just needs to work on striking. He really needs to work on striking because, like we said, only 10 significant strikes, all right? And he only attempted 35 significant strikes. This boy was not throwing at all. So if Kashyyyk Sakumar can go to the independence and maybe come back 10-1, get another shot, I think, you know, he could potentially be good. But he just needs to fix some holes in his game. As for Lewis Lee Scott, you looked wonderful. Next up, the second to last matchup of the evening, Cam Ralston and Brandon Holmes. Cam making me eat my words. I thought he would get dominated again in the grappling department, but I was proved wrong immediately right away. He lost to Torres Finney on last year's episode of, or last year's season of Dana White's Contender Series. Not this time around. In 2 minutes and 58 seconds, he landed 2 knockdowns, 26 significant strikes, and a takedown to send Brandon Holmes packing. Brandon Holmes falls to 5-1, but Cam Ralston improves to 12-3. Good stuff for Cam. Really good stuff. 4-fight winning streak now. Looked really dominant. And Dana White said they're getting him on the Perth card. By the way, that Perth card right now has 16 fights made. Dana White said he doesn't care. He's putting this kid on that card. The Battle Giraffe. What a fun nickname for Cam Ralston. He is 6'3". So this is a tall, tall middleweight, but amazing work. Amazing work for Cam. Just really stayed in his face. And Brandon at one point was just hit super badly and he stunned on the feet, which just allowed Cam to cock back a straight. And that was that for Brandon Holmes. Just night, night, no more. Cam Ralston, amazing work. Probably the best finish of the night. I would say out of all our finishes we got, this was probably my favorite. Cam Ralston, really liked what you did here. I thought Brandon was going to grapple him to death throughout this fight, but Cam allowed no room for it, controlled this fight from the get-go, and has earned himself a spot in the UFC, and even a spot on the Perth card, which is coming up September 27th. If that fight card has 17 fights, that will be insane. That'll be the longest card ever, and I'm literally just going to have to take my whole day off. Whole day is just going to be watching some Australian fights. So, amazing work, Cam Ralston. Very impressive. And the main event came around, and this is literally a fight you would see in the UFC. These are two guys who are clearly UFC caliber, one very much so more than the other, as Jose Delano takes Emmanuel Esposito to school, 30-27 across the board, 146 significant strikes to 38, utter domination from Jose Delano, 43-11 significant strikes in round one, 51-14 in round two, 52-13 in round number three. Avoids 2 takedowns in round one. Jose Delano is UFC caliber. And I think it was Dana White was saying on the, not like the press conference, but on like the post-fight interview where he announces everything, that Sean Shelby was basically saying like, yeah, I could see this guy hanging with a bunch of guys in the UFC. So great stuff from Jose Delano. He's clearly UFC ready. They're going to try and get him in the UFC. And he looked very, very impressive while handling all of his business. Where is he from? Actually, he's from Brazil, so I don't think they can get him on that Rio card, tragically. But hey, undefeated still. Oh no, he's 16-3. This kid has a lot of experience. 28 years old, 4-fight winning streak now. Dominant stuff from Jose Delano. And as for Emmanuel Esposito, this dude is clearly good. He is just like, I think like if we had had Emmanuel Esposito versus Ramiro Jimenez, since they're both featherweight, that would have probably been a very good fight. But he just, you know, Jose couldn't put him away. Emmanuel just hung in there. But Jose Delano is going to be a very good UFC fighter. I'm actually excited for all of these guys to make their UFC debuts. I really like Jose Delano or Ramiro Jimenez's chances in the featherweight division. Cam Ralston, we're going to have to see at middleweight, but he appears he is ready. Lewis Lee Scott, whether at bantamweight or featherweight, I think will be a hit. And as for Josh, look, I don't know. Josh Hokit's going to get some UFC wins. I'll guarantee that. But I don't know his ceiling, because I'm always interested in the heavyweight division, especially on here. But like, I don't think he would beat Rizvan Kuniev or Volter Walker, if I'm being honest. Maybe Mick Parkin, maybe Tai Tuivasa, but like Shamil Gaziev, I don't think he'd beat. So I don't know. But this was a good card, or good fight night. Actually, we can call this a card. It's basically, you know, it's Dana White's Contender Series. It's a little 5-fight card, if you want to say that. But it was entertaining. It was fun. And I'll be excited for next week. And I'm not even going to look at any fights for next week. I'm just just going to go in blind because that's how I like to do it. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right on into this UFC Shanghai card because it's going to be a fun ride. And we kick off the card with a light heavyweight matchup between Yuron Gorilla Satibaldiev and Diyar Nurgozhe. Hey, I absolutely love these fun foreign names. They're just a joy to pronounce. Yuron 8-1, Diyar 10-1. 6'4 to 6'2, 2 inches in height for Yuron and 5 inches in reach, 79-74. Orthodox stance for Yuron, southpaw for Diyar. Very interesting stuff here between these two. Both men suffered defeats in their first and only UFC fights they've had so far, and now they find themselves fighting each other, which tells me the UFC is weaning out which one of them will stay and which one of them will be eliminated from staying in the UFC. Diyar is the underdog at plus 250. Yuron is the favorite at minus 300. Let's start with Diyar Nurgozhe. Diyar Nurgozhe is 28 years old from Astana, Kazakhstan. Of his 10 wins, he has 8 finishes, 6 KOs, and 2 subs, and he trains at Aryan MMA O Team. Is that the note that I wrote down? Aryan MMA Pio Team. I guess that's just a fun fact of where he trains. I don't know if I had anything else to go with that. Usually I add a fighter who they're fighting with because there is a gym on this card which has 5 fighters from it, which is going to be fun to talk about. But Diyar debuted on Dan Whitt's Contender Series last year, actually on my birthday, getting a little round 2 knockout of Bartosz Swoski, and it was dominant. He looked good, he was undefeated, and he comes in 10-0 into the UFC and runs into Brenson Ribeiro in March. In the Apex, he gets submitted in round 2 with a Kimura and leaves very little to be desired for the division, but he had a lot of hype coming in. Unfortunately, that was curved by Brenson Ribeiro. Unfortunately for Brenson Ribeiro, he has ran into just tough competition in the UFC. Holds a win over Diyar, but holds losses to Osmat Mirzakhanov and Zhongming Yang. So, tough opponent, but nonetheless, Diyar is coming off of a loss. Similar stuff for Yuron Satibaldiev. Our favorite in this contest is 31 years old from Osh City, Kyrgyzstan, not Kyrgyzstan, Kyrgyzstan. He actually trains at Ulu Kyrgyz Team with Maitebek Orlbay. We all know Maitebek Orlbay. Lovely lightweight. Good fan of him. 7 of his 8 wins have came by finish, 6 KOs, and 1 sub. And he actually stepped in on short notice at heavyweight earlier this year in April at the Apex, losing to Martin Boudet. Didn't really give us much in that contest either, but nonetheless, he did win a round over Martin Boudet, funny enough. I think it was round number 1, I want to say. But yeah, Yuron back in action. He's 9-1. Diyar is 10-1. I could see this going either way. But what I'm going to go off of is their last performances, and plus the little bit of reach and height that go to Yuron Satibaldiev. But him taking Martin Boudet to a close decision is way more impressive than Diyar Nurgozhe losing to freaking Brenson Ribeiro by Kimura. So we are actually going to pick Yuron Satibaldiev to get this done. I would be very surprised if this went the distance. I would be very shocked if this went the distance. However, anything can happen. So we're going to go with Yuron. This is really 50-50, but based on what I have seen personally from these two, Yuron looked just a tinge more impressive. Going from light heavyweight all the way down to bantamweight, we have Zhao Long taking on Suyong Yujitsu Yu. His name is Yujitsu. Like his last name, Yu, and Jiu-Jitsu. That's right, Yu-Jitsu. Oh gosh, that's like kind of a little tongue twister if you say it really fast. Jiu-Jitsu. Oh, how fun. Zhao Long is 27-9. Suyong Yu is 15-3 with 2 no contests. 5'8 to 5'6. You have 2 inches in height for Zhao Long and 5 inches in reach, 70 inches to 65. Similar height advantages that Yuron has over Diyar. Both of these young boys stand in the orthodox fighting position. And Long Zhao is coming in as the underdog, plus 120. Suyong Yu is the minus 120 favorite. So plus 120. 20 for Zhao Long, minus 140 for Suyong Yu. Zhao Long is 27 years old from none other than Shanghai. He trains at the same gym as Algonquin, which is just some Shanghai gym. Algonquin's a fighter that has fought in the UFC before. Of his 27 wins, he has 5 KOs and 9 subs. subs. Of his 9 defeats, he's been KO'd 3 times. And that's right, this kid is 27-9 at 27 years old. That is insane. Fought on Damas Quintero series in 2021 Season 5, losing to Christian Quiñones. He would then come back under the promotion in the Road to the UFC Season 2, beating Shohei Noyes and Shuye Kamuche by decision before losing to Chang Ho Lee in an official, basically to win the Road to the UFC. He lost that matchup by split decision. But he did come back November 2024, last time they were in China, and got a round 3 knockout of Quang Li. So, Xiao Long coming in with a little bit of momentum, coming in off a knockout win. Good for him. They're getting him on the second China card they've had in the last, goodness, I don't even know what, 6 years? So, well, they love to see that. Xiao Long should be fun in what feels more so like his official UFC debut here, although he already has had 2 fights under the banner, weirdly enough. His opponent, Su Young Yu, Jiu-Jitsu, is 29 years old from Gyeonggi-do, South Korea. 3 KOs and 5 subs make up his 15 victories, and of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been finished once by knockout. Su Young Yu is currently on a 4-fight winning streak. He also fought on the last season of Road to the UFC, beating 2 fighters, and then winning it in Shanghai last year, beating Bargeng Gelese by decision. He would then come back in March of this year and beat AJ Cunningham in the Apex, landing 5 takedowns for a total of 8 minutes of control time. Su Young Yu is back, he's hungry, he's ready, and he's looking to get it done, but you know what? I'm going to ride to the hometown boy here in Xiao Long. He looked way more exciting against Quang Li than Su Young Yu did against freaking AJ Cunningham, and he couldn't even finish AJ Cunningham, and AJ Cunningham almost caught him in a submission. So we're going to go with Xiao Long. He is the hometown boy, and we have a habit here of always picking the hometown boy. So Long Xiao over Su Young Yu is my official prediction, and we're going to even sprinkle in a little round 2 knockout, because why not? Moving up to featherweight, we have the great Yiz Ha. That's right, his name. Y-A-Y-I-Z-H-A. Yizha takes on Weston Wilson. 25-5 is the professional record for Yizha. 17-9 is the record for Weston Wilson. 6'1-5'7 gives an insane 6-inch height advantage for Weston Wilson, but only 2 inches in reach, 73-71. Southpaw stands for Weston, orthodox for Yizha. Yizha is coming in as the -1500 favorite. +775 Weston is a massive underdog. Yizha coming in 28 years old from none other than Shanghai, China, and he trains at Enbo Gym, otherwise known as Enbo Fight Club, with Rong Zhu, with Suma Darji, with Mahashat, with Tyarlaki Naraji. You're going to hear Enbo Fight Club a lot on today's episode. Of his 25 wins, he has 19 finishes, 5 KOs, and 14 subs, and of his 5 defeats, he's only ever been finished twice, once by sub and once by knockout. Currently right now, he has fought in the UFC a number of times. He fought on the first ever Road to the UFC in 2022, losing on a fight night. It was actually Derek Lewis versus Sergey Spivak's fight night by split decision to Jiyoung Lee. He would then come back on season 2, winning it actually, beating Kaiwan to win it back in 2024. Now, unfortunately, only had 1 fight last year. It was in September against Gabriel Santos, but Gabriel Santos is one tough boy, and he couldn't put away Yizha. So Yizha is coming in off of a defeat, but he's very experienced for his 28 years of age. I mean, 30 professional fights. When you have more fights than your age, that says a lot about your fighting ability. Yizha, he's dominant, he's good, and we'll have to see how he does when he faces a boy who is not from Shanghai, who is not the hometown boy. He's coming all the way from South Carolina. That is the 36-year-old Weston Wilson. He actually trains at the same gym as Wonderboy Thompson. That's right, the gym that Wonderboy and his dad own. That's right, Weston trains there. Of Weston's 17 wins, he has 5 KOs and 12 subs, giving him a 100% finish rate. Of his 9 defeats, he has been finished a whopping 7 times. That is pretty insane. 7 times. I believe 6 of them are by knockout once he's been finished by sub. I do have a stat here. 2019 was the last time he left round 1. That is insane. That is insane. By the way, of his 26 professional fights, 21 have ended in the distance. So it has been 6 years since Weston Wilson has left round 1. And so far in the UFC, he is 1-2. Knocked out by Anderson Brito in 2023, knocked out by Gene Silva in 2024, and then submitted Jekka Saragai in 2024. So, Ben, over a year since we've last seen Weston Wilson, this is really going to tell the level of ability he's at. Now, as I can see here, Dre Anderson, Brito, and Gene Silva are very tough opposition, and Jake Sarigai isn't the best of competition. So that leaves us to, where does Yiz Ha fall? And really, we don't know. Obviously, Gabriel Santos whooped him. Gabriel Santos utterly dominated him, but he couldn't put away Yiz Ha. And, you know, Yiz Ha is fighting in front of his hometown of China. You know, as I look at Yiz Ha, he has been taken down a lot, which is a bit of concern. And also, Weston Wilson is a massive underdog. And as it looks, Yiz Ha doesn't have that many knockouts. He only has 5 knockouts. He's much more of a submission artist. All of his wins under UFC promotions have come by submission. And, you know, this may be a reach, but this is the biggest underdog on the card. And some's just telling me Weston Wilson is going to get this done. And, you know, we didn't get to being over plus 100 in predictions by picking the easy guy every single time. No, no, no. And one last no. I'm going to hit you boys with this. I got the plus 775 underdog, Weston Wilson, by round one submission. I know it may be crazy, but we just do not know enough about Yiz Ha. And I know he's the hometown boy from Shanghai. I absolutely love that. But Weston Wilson just beat Jake Sarigai. His last 2 losses are to Gene Silva, who's literally main eventing UFC Noche, and Joe Henderson Brito in his prime. We know how good Joe Henderson Brito was, okay? So Weston Wilson, this is going to be risky, but it's not like Yiz Ha is an established fighter. So Weston Wilson, round one sub over Yiz Ha. Yeah, this is one of the riskiest picks I've ever made. Next up, middleweight division, and we are just sacrificing people. I hope this isn't some like satanic cult type thing where you sacrifice people, because we are feeding Kyle Daukaus to Michelle Demoledor Pereira. That is right. I know Michelle loves Jesus, so I'm not too worried. Michelle Pereira, 31-13 with 2 no contests. Kyle Daukaus, 15-4 with 1 no contest. 6'3 to 6'1, 2 inches in height for Kyle Daukaus, and 3 inches in reach. 76-73, southpaw for Kyle Daukaus, and orthodox for Michelle Pereira. This one, Michelle Pereira coming in minus 300. Kyle Daukaus plus 250 is the underdog. Michelle Pereira, you know him, you love him. 31 years old from Brazil. 19 of his 31 wins are by finish. 11 KOs and 8 subs. And he's only been finished 3 times of his 13 defeats, which is pretty freaking good. He was supposed to fight Marco Tulio here, which was going to be a massive, massive fight. But unfortunately, Marco pulled out. So nonetheless, in steps Kyle Daukaus. But for Michelle Pereira, been with the UFC since 2019, has had a pretty insane run. So far, I'd say everything was insane about his run up until his last matchup. He, of course, debuts, hits a beautiful flying knee over Danny Roberts, then has one of the weirdest fight of the nights against Tristan Connolly ever. Then, unfortunately, gets DQ'd when he's killing Diego Sanchez, then goes on an insane 8-fight winning streak, including a whopping 3-fight streak where he finishes his opponent in exactly 1 minute or less. He's had multiple fight of the nights. This dude's super entertaining, but over his last 2 fights, he unfortunately ran into Anthony Hernandez in a main event last October and fought in April this year and lost to Abus Magomedov. But, you know, Abus Magomedov is pretty freaking good. However, Michelle just didn't look his normal self there. He just really didn't. So we'll see if he can get back to his finishing ways. I think he should easily win this one. I think it's set up for Michelle Pereira to win. But there's always a prospect for upset when he takes on Kyle Daukaus, who his nickname is the Darce Knight. And for some reason, the UFC is not listing that. His nickname is literally the Darce Knight. It's on his tapology, but Kyle Daukaus, 32 years old from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is currently on a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 15 wins, he has 12 finishes, 1 KO, and 11 subs, and he's your current CFFC champion in the middleweight division. Good for him. Since leaving the UFC in December of 2022 after being cut, he's gone on a 4-fight winning streak, including 3 by submission. That is right. Actually, I think he had a knockout there. The other 2 were Darce chokes, thus his nickname, the Darce Knight. He came into the UFC in 2019 off of season 3 of Dana's Contreras series, for debuting against Brendan Allen, suffering a defeat, beating Dustin Stolfus, losing to Phil Haas, having an overturned no contest against Kevin Holland, submitting Jamie Pickett before brutally getting finished by Rowan Dolidze, and then finally getting brutally finished by Eric Anders, who, by the way, Eric Anders also beat him in a grappling contest, so I hate to say it, is that Kyle Daukaus is owned by Eric Anders. But Michelle Pereira, look, I think he is leagues a better than Kyle Daukaus, but if you're ever going to see an upset, it's going to be Kyle Daukaus pulling off a submission over Michelle Pereira. I think you see Michelle go across the cage, get around one knockout. That's my prediction. Let's ride with Demoledor Pereira. Michelle Pereira, not Michelle Cacara. Michelle Cacara? Could that be a new nickname for him? Definitely not. Next up, lightweight division, and I've just been jonesing to see this boy back in the UFC. Rong Zhu is finally back since February as he takes on Austin Thud Hubbard. Rong Zhu, the minus 290 favorite. Austin Hubbard in here at plus 240. Rong Zhu is 26-6. Austin is 17-9. 5'10 to 5'9, 1 inch in height for Austin. Both men are in the orthodox fighting stance and have a 71-inch reach. My boy, Rong Zhu, born in March of 2000, is the ripe age of 25, and he is from China, and he trains out of none other than Enbo Fight Club. It's actually, he actually also trains out of New Zealand. Oddly enough, that's right. He's actually really cool with the new, like the boys out of the city kickboxing. Rong Zhu is a little international boy, yes, sir. Of his 26 wins, I mean, this dude, finishing machine, 21 finishes, 14 KOs, 7 subs, absolute legend. Of his 6 defeats, he has been finished 5 times, 4 by sub and once by knockout. But Rong Zhu has been action packed since he joined the UFC. You know, obviously had a little stint in 2021, 2022, went 1-2, including a defeat against Ignacio Bahomanes. Would then come in on season 2 of Road to the UFC, and then he would win that, beating Shin Haraguchi, and then unfortunately getting injured against Chris Padilla, losing by TKO. But then, ladies and gentlemen, earlier this year, he took on Cody Steele in one of the most underground prelim bangers you can ever see, UFC 312, which is one of the worst pay-per-views I've ever seen in my life. This was the biggest highlight out of that. Rong Zhu, Cody Steele is 3 rounds of just 2 guys looking to take each other's heads off, and it was amazing, and I am such a fan of Rong Zhu for it, and as you can tell, you already know who I'm picking, but you know what? We'll give Austin Hubbard the benefit of the doubt. 33 years old, born in Illinois, now fights out of Denver. 7 of his 17 wins by finish, 4 KOs, 3 subs. Of his 9 defeats, he's been submitted 3 times. He's currently 1-4 in his last 5, which is not too pretty. Since his second stint in the UFC, he has gone 1-3, including back-to-back split decision losses. He did have a stint from 2019 to 2021, which was very lackluster. He went 3-4, so this guy is somehow in the UFC with a 4-7 record. Look, Rong Zhu, let's make easy work of this boy. Let's submit him in round 1. Let's knock him out round 1. You know, this is going to be Rong Zhu. Austin Hubbard is about to be 1-Rong. Okay, 1-Rong. Rong Zhu is going to do nasty things to you, Austin Hubbard. I am certain of it. After that, we get into our flyweight matchup of the evening as the number 50th ranked Charles Johnson, that's right, the newly ranked number 15th flyweight Charles Johnson, takes on the undefeated prospect out of London, Loner Kavanaugh. Inner G, Charles, 17-7. Loner is 9-0. 3 inches in height for Charles, 5'9 to 5'6, and 3 inches in reach, 70 to 67. Switch stance for Inner G, orthodox for the undefeated Brit, Loner Kavanaugh. That's right, Loner coming in minus 215. Charles is plus 180. Let's start with the number 15th ranked Charles Johnson. He is 34 years old from St. Louis, Missouri, and he actually fights out of Tiger Muay Thai. I didn't even know this boy was like that. That's in Thailand, but he also fights out of a number of other gyms. He has like 3 main gyms he floats around at. Of his 17 wins, he has 10 by finish, 6 KOs, and 4 subs. And of his 7 defeats, this dude has never been finished. Very impressive stuff from Charles Johnson. He's had a really stellar UFC run so far. The wins come and the losses come, and he somehow has a perfect record of 5-5 in the UFC. So I think this is going to make or break Charles Johnson's run in the UFC. His little 4-fight win streak, beating Azak Maksim, Jake Hadley, Joshua Van, for goodness sakes, and Sumer Darji, was utterly insane. His last time out against Ramazan Temeryov, he did lose in March, but I do want to add with that is that this was a close fight. This was a very close fight, and Charles Johnson ended it like he won round 3. So if you're ever going to see an upset, I really feel that Charles Johnson is not out of his prime whatsoever. And when I look at his last 2 losses, they're literally to undefeated prospects in Ramazan Temeryov and Rafael Estevam. I do want to say that. And also another loss, Muhammad Mokaev in the UFC, Odey Osborne, for goodness sakes, like, come on. Charles Johnson is pretty freaking good, and we'll see how he does against the prospect Loner Kavanaugh. Loner is 26 years old, of course, from London. He actually trains at Great Britain Top Team with none other than Nathaniel Wood, Alfie Davis, who recently won the PFL Lightweight Championship, or might have been Featherweight Championship, one of the two, and Mark Diakise, That's right. The great Mark Dickey say, we will miss you greatly for your grappling feats in the UFC. Of his 9 wins, he has 5 finishes, 4 KOs, and 1 sub. And this will be his 3rd fight in the UFC. Got a round 1 knockout on season 8 of Dana White's Contender Series before debuting in Shanghai last year, beating Josh Ochoa. He would then beat Felipe Dos Santos in March, which would bring his record to 9-0. I will say Lohner is impressive, but he hasn't done necessarily anything out of this world. You know, being honest, he actually lost round 1 to Felipe Dos Santos. And the Jose Ochoa fight, it was very, very close. I mean, people gave a 30-27, but I thought it was 1-1 heading into the third, and the third was a swing round for either man. So Lohner is coming in with some momentum. Shanghai is kind of a second home for him. He does kind of rep the Chinese flag at times, but there's just something about Charles Johnson. There just really is. Like, this is just screaming for an upset. Just how Weston Wilson is screaming for an upset, this is just screaming as an upset for me. And especially as I look at the rest of the card and how I'm probably picking all the favorites, I think this is another great opportunity to pick an underdog that's going to come out victorious. I think a lot of people are going to be making the same prediction here, but I am not sold yet on Lohner Kavanaugh. Now, if Lohner goes out there, knocks off Charles, huge respect to him. On our recap show, I will completely give him his props. But I am going to pick Charles Johnson to get this done. And I might even go as far to say he's going to get a round 2 submission, round 3 submission. And similar to how he did Joshua Vam. Like, Charles Johnson is super good. He's super underrated. And I think he's just going to, you know, kind of outclass Lohner Kavanaugh here. And you're going to see a 26-year-old who's 9-0 versus a 25-fight veteran in Charles Johnson at 34. You're going to see that skill gap here. So we are going to go with Charles Johnson here in another upset pick of the evening. Last prelim of the evening, I believe, is going to be, unless they do a 5-fight main card. Yeah, this I think a 6-fight main card, but I think they're going to do a 5-fight main card. So Mahashat and Gage Young is going to be closing out the prelims. Mahashat, the underdog, plus 110, is 10-4, and Gage G Money Young is the minus 140 favorite. 9-3 for Gage Young. 6'5", 9", get 3 inches in height for Mahashat, and 1 inch in reach for the Chinese lad. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen. And this is going to be your third fighter fighting out of the Enbo Fight Club. That is right. Mahashat trains out of the same gym as Yizha and Rung Zhu, one of my favorite fighters. Mahashat coming into this contest, 25 years old from China, but now actually fights out of Kazakhstan, for goodness sakes. I guess that's where he fights out of, even though he trains out of a Shanghai gym, for goodness sakes. 5 of his 10 wins have came by finish with 4 KOs and 1 sub, but he's never been finished in all 4 of his defeats. That's not true. He was knocked down once by Vyacheslav Borshev, as I look at his UFC stats. Fought on season 5 of Dana White's Contender Series, somehow earning a contract that would knock out Steve Garcia in his debut. That is right, the Steve Garcia, who's now the number 12 ranked featherweight on the planet. He would then lose to Rafa Garcia, get knocked out by Vyacheslav Borshev, win a split decision over Gabriel Benitez, and last time he fought, Nicholas Mota beat him in they weren't in Shanghai last time. Where was Jan and Figueiredo? They were in Macau. Last time out in UFC Macau, he did lose. But with a UFC record of 2-3, this is make or break for Mahashat, and this is a 50-50 matchup here as he takes on Gage Young. Gage Young, currently coming in, 25 years old as well, from Missouri. 7 of his 9 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 1 sub, and of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. Lost to Quinlan Sakyad on Dana White's Contender Series last season before debuting in April this year on short notice to take on Evan Elder. Evan Elder would school him 30-27, but Gage really showed some heart. He showed some heart. This kid clearly is talented, clearly is good, and I sense some good things coming out of him. But, this is not, you know, a Gage Young show. I don't know if he's really going to be getting it done here. This is 50-50. It was a very 50-50 fight. This one I'm not very sold on, especially since my only real opinion of Mahashat is the fact he was knocked out cold by Vyacheslav Borshev in round 2. That's like all I remember from Mahashat of all his UFC fights. That's the one I remember. But I do think I have to pick at least some of these Shanghai fighters, so I am going to ride with Mahashat. Dude, actually, am I? Am I going to ride with Mahashat here? I don't really know. How did UFC fighters do on Macau last year? We should actually check that real quickly. See how they did on UFC Macau when that went down. Let's see. You had Yan Chaonin winning. Song Qinan lost. Wang Kong got upset. Zhang Mingyang won. Su Young Yu won. Dong Hu Choi won. Shi Ming won. Nyam Jergalter Dimbo lost. Quang Li lost, but Xiaolong won. Mahashat lost. So it's really 50-50. I think Mahashat is going to redeem himself. He's not going to get knocked out twice in China, especially in front of his actual hometown crowd of Shanghai. So we're going to ride with Mahashat to get himself a decision victory here. That is what we will go with. Now getting into our main card, welterweight division, and we have Super Saiyan Taiyelake Nuraji making his UFC debut as he takes on BDK Kiefer Crosby. Bind, torture, kill. What? Kiefer Crosby has a serial killer's nickname. What is this? Taiyelake Nuraji, we're just going to call him Super Saiyan, 11-1 with one no contest. BDK, 10-5. Kiefer Crosby, 6'2 to 5'11. 3 inches in height for Taiyelake. 5 inches in reach as well for Super Saiyan. Southpaw for the man from China. And switch stance for Kiefer Crosby. Let's start with Super Saiyan. What a great nickname. The 24-year-old is from Sichuan, China, and he is on a 5-5 winning streak. And lo and behold, he fights out of Enbo Fight Club. Of his 11 victories, 11 defeats. That is wrong. Not 11 defeats of 11 victories. 11 finishes, 10 KOs, and 1 sub. And his one defeat was by knockout a couple years ago. He was actually supposed to fight, I'm pretty sure... Song Keenan, Kiefer Crosby was, but Keenan Song had to pull out, so in steps Taiyelake Nuraji. And Taliake's last fight was in August of 2024, so it's been a while, but this guy did actually fight on Road to the UFC back in 2023, and then nothing came of him. So, but he's here, he's on a nice little winning streak, he's an absolute killer, and we'll see how he does as he takes on the man who is 11 years older than him in Kiefer Crosby. The underdog, plus 280, Kiefer Crosby, is 35 years old, trains at SBG Ireland, he is from Ireland, that is the same gym as Conor McGregor, and he has 7 of his 10 wins by finish, 5 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he has been finished 4 times, 3 by sub, 1 by knockout, and yes, of course, supposed to fight Keenan Song, Song Keenan. I cannot even remember how to pronounce your name. You've been gone so long. Currently 0-2 in the UFC. He has been submitted in round 1 in both of his fights. And I just don't think it's going to get better. I think Kiefer Crosby has been mistakenly put in the UFC due to his ties to SBJ or SBG and Conor McGregor. I think Taiyelake Nuraji, Super Saiyan, however you say his name, is going to knock him out in round 1. Yeah, we don't need to give Kiefer Crosby any time out here. This would probably be the biggest upset in my mind. Weston Wilson won't impress me. Charles Johnson won't impress me. Kiefer Crosby beating freaking Taiyelake Nuraji Super Saiyan will impress me. That'll surprise me the most. So we're going to go with Super Saiyan here with a nickname like that. How can you not pick him? Next up, flyweight division, Sumedarji the Tabishan Eagle. Back in action as he takes on El Gallo Negro, Kevin Borjas. I don't know what El Gallo Negro means, but it might mean the Great Black, and I don't know what that means either. Sumedarji, 17-7 is the minus 150 favorite, 10-3, and also the minus plus 130 underdog, Kevin Borjas, coming in here. 5'8 to 5'5, 3 inches in height for Sumedarji, and 4 inches in reach for him. 72-68 southpaw for the Tabishan Eagle, orthodox for El Gallo Negro. A interesting nickname. Sumedarji coming in, 29 years old, and he trains out of Enbo Fight Club. That is right. But he actually also fights out of California, funny enough. 13 KOs and 1 sub give him 14 of his 17 wins by finish, and unfortunately 6 of his 7 losses have came by submission. Like, this dude gets submitted left, right, and center. It's actually kind of funny. So far in the UFC, he is 4-4. So this will make or break it. For Sumedarji, is coming off a win, and UFC 314, he beat Mitch Raposo, but before that, he had lost to Charles Johnson, Tim Elliott, Matt Schnell. By the way, Matt Schnell, fight of the night, but also before that, he had been on a 3-fight win streak, so we've seen both sides of Sumedarji. We've seen losses, we've seen wins. This is make or break it for him, and he gets a tough opponent in Kevin Borjas. The underdog is 27 years old from Peru, and of his 10 wins, has 8 by knockout. Of his three defeats, he's been submitted once and knocked out once. He's currently 1-2 in the UFC, and recently upset Ronaldo Rodriguez in Mexico City earlier this year in March, so good for him. Before that, he had been knocked out by Alessandro Costa and lost the decision to Joshua Van. So we clearly know that Kevin Borjas is entertaining. We clearly know that he is good. He's coming off a big win. He fights out of Peru, but it's Sumedarji. We love Sumedarji, and I will say is that Sumedarji has usually lost when he's getting taken down. In fact, in every UFC defeat that he has had, he was taken down a minimum of twice. And even in his last time out when he won a split decision, he was taken down 6 times by Mitch Raposo. Now, mind you, he defended 13 of them, so we do need to give a bit of leniency to Sumedarji here. So Kevin does have success on the feet. That might be a bit of a worry for Sumedarji, but if this is a stand and bang, I'm going to ride with the man who has 13 career knockouts, and that's Sumedarji. That is right. Embo Fight Club ends the night going positive with a Sumedarji knockout of Kevin Borjas. That is my prediction for this main card matchup. Now we get into the big three of this card. There's always a big three. I feel the final three fights of the card, sometimes it's the big four, the big three, the big two, the big one. Usually it's the big three. And we go to the men's heavyweight division as the number three ranked Sergey Pavlovich takes on the number six ranked Waldo Cortes Acosta. Sergey, 19-3 is your -255 favorite. Salsa boy Waldo Cortes Acosta with a record of 14-1 is your +210 underdog. 1 inch in height for Waldo, 6'4" to 6'3". 6 inches in reach for Sergey, 84-78. Southpaw for Sergey, orthodox for Waldo. That reach is what really makes me lead Sergey here. Let me just tell you that right off the bat. That reach is what's going to prove crucial for Sergey getting the victory if he does. 33 years old from Moscow. He actually trains out of Eagles MMA with none other than Movled Kayabrav. I don't know really how to say his name, but he recently became the PFL, I think, welterweight champion. It might have been welterweight, and he's 24-0, undefeated. So Sergey trains out of a really good gym in Moscow. Of his 19 wins, 15 KOs. And let's not forget the six-fight winning streak where he had six round-one knockouts. That was incredible. As of late, kind of a rough going for Sergey Pavlovich. It's been over 2 years since his last real knockout victory. Of course, lost to Tom Aspinall in 2023 at UFC 295, and then had one fight in 2024, losing a decision to his once friend, Alexander Volkov. Took about a year and a half off, and then took about 8 months off, I should better say, and came back in Saudi Arabia this year and just destroyed Jairzinho Rozenstruik, but did it in very boring fashion. 6 minutes of control time on the ground. You know, never really was in threat of, you know, getting a knockout. So Sergey really just wanted to get back to his winning ways, and I think he's got a little bit of confidence now. I think the, you know, loss to Aspinall and Volkov are past their way, and I think we're getting back to the scary Russian polar bear that we know in Sergey Pavlovich. But he's taking on a rising man who is oddly the same age of him at 33 from the Dominican Republic, but now actually trains out of Phoenix. That is Salsa Boy Waldo Cortes Acosta. The win streak is at 5, and his total UFC record is 7-1. Of his 14 victories, half of them are by finish, 6 KOs and 1 sub, and his 1 defeat is by decision. Waldo came in off of a round 1 knockout on Damas Quintero series in 2022, winning 2 boring fights over Jared Vandera and Chase Sherman before dropping a boring decision to Marco Sergio de Lima. He would finally get to his finishing ways in Singapore, beating Lucas Brazil in 2023, after unofficially retiring Andrei Arlovski in 2024 and then getting Robles Desponga kicked out of the UFC by beating him so badly by just grappling. He would finally get another finish of Ryan Spann in March of this year with a round 2 TKO. He would come back in June at UFC 316, beating Sergey Spivak in one of the most lackluster fights we saw on that card. Look, Waldo Cortes Acosta has gotten to this point with some of the most boring baseline striking you could ever see. All right, he's technical. He literally just casually outboxes you. That is the name of his game. And I'm really hoping that Sergey Pavlovich just uncocks his head in round number one. I'm praying he just decapitates him. I'm so sorry. That actually sounds really weird to wish out loud. But Sergey Pavlovich, round one knockout, I not only am picking it, I'm not only rooting for it, I am praying for it. I really hope this is the outcome we get. But with that, we get into our final two matchups, essentially two main events. This is basically two main events you're getting here as the number 7 and number 5 ranked featherweights do battle as T-City. Brian Ortega takes on the Funk Master Aljamain Sterling, and T-City is a +250 underdog. Aljo is the -305 favorite. T-City is 16-4 with 1 no contest. The former bantamweight champion Aljamain Sterling is 24-5. Only 1 inch in height for Brian Ortega, 5'8" to 5'7", and 2 inches in reach for Aljo, 71-69. Switch stance for T-City. Brian Ortega, orthodox for Aljo. This is going to be good. This is really a high-level featherweight matchup, and I just feel so special that we're going to get this. And the craziest part is, the winner of this is going to be ranked just below Leron Murphy At number five, oddly enough. Let's start with number five ranked Brian Ortega, 34 years old from California. He trains at the Black House MMA with some notable names such as Mackenzie Dern, Bubba Jenkins, former PFL champion, and none other than the great Laito Machida. Of his 16 wins, he has 11 finishes, 3 KOs, and 8 subs. And of his 4 defeats, he's only ever been finished twice. But in reality, Brian Ortega has never truly been finished. Been with the UFC since 2014. He has been around a while. At one point, he was undefeated before he lost the Fight of the Year contender to Max Holloway in 2018. He would follow that up with a win over Chan Sung Jung before gaining a title shot in 2021 against Alexander Volkanovski, which was utterly amazing. He would then unfortunately get injured against Yair Rodriguez in 2022 before coming back 2 years later to get revenge and submit him in February of 2024. His last fight was in September of 2024 at UFC 306, the last no shave he had, where Diego Lopez almost knocked him out in round one and made him look silly across 3 rounds. So Brian Ortega is, you know, unfortunately 1-3 in his last 4, 2-4 in his, actually 1-3 in his last 4, 2-4 in his last 6. It's been a rough going. All right. The once undefeated, you know, 14-0 guy is now since gone 2-4. So this is make or break for Brian Ortega. If he wants to get one more title shot, this is where he needs to do it. He not only needs to win this, but he will need to win one more. So Brian Ortega, this is make or break. He's going to need to out-grapple Aljo. He's going to need to beat him on the feet, get a submission, because this man's going to smother you and you have to be ready. The Funkmaster, 36 years old from New York City, trains out of Matsera BJJ. Sarah BJJ, of course, Marab Dovshelly, his training partner, Nassim Sadiqov, another notable name. It's a very good gym, if you ask me. 3 KOs and 8 subs. What the heck? Oddly enough, Aljamain Sterling has the same number of knockouts and subs as Brian T. City Ortega. Very, very interesting. Of his 5 defeats, he has also been knocked out 2 times. What in the world? However, he has actually been knocked out in both of those ones. I mean, despite his unfortunate luck as of late being 1-2 since August of 2023, he's actually gone 3-1 in grappling, you know, over this last, you know, 2 years. So Aljo does stay active in the grappling department. Last 3 fights, lost the belt to Aljamain, to Sean O'Malley in 2023, debuted in featherweight at UFC 300, just grappling Calvin Kerr to death, and fought at UFC 310, losing to Mosfar Evlov. But that is one of the most fantastic fights I have seen. I mean, Mosfar and Aljamain Sterling is a grappling matchup through and through. 12 and a half minutes of control time, you know, in this fight is fought on the ground. It is so entertaining. And nonetheless, Aljamain stole round one over Mosfar. Mosfar won round two. It was a 50-50 round three. They gave the nod to Mosfar. That was such a fun fight. And it just really speaks to how good Aljamain Sterling is. And if I'm being honest, I really am riding with Aljo here. Brian Ortega looked like a shell of himself the last 2 times he fought. And I just don't think it's going to get any better here. Meanwhile, for Aljo, you know, I have seen him go 1-1 at featherweight, but just look lively in each of them. And when I look at just the faces of these guys while they're fighting, that tells me all I need to know. So I'm going to go with Aljamain Sterling. Now, 5 rounds is a long time to out-grapple someone. It really is. And this isn't no Piotr Jan whatsoever, but we do know that Brian Ortega has some amazing jiu-jitsu, but I'm going to go, since this guy's never been submitted, and since we've been very much in need of an Aljamain Sterling submission, I'm going to say Aljo gets a shocking round 3 submission. That's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to say we don't even need the extra 4 and 5 rounds. I think Aljo goes out there, maybe deals with a little bit of adversity in round 1, but finally round 3, breaks down Brian, takes his back, locks in the old, good old trusty rear naked chokehold, and gets the submission. We're going to ride with Aljo to be the number 5 ranked featherweight by the time the rankings get updated in a week on next Tuesday. So, Aljo, I'm picking you, and it should be exciting to see if that comes to fruition. But, ladies and gentlemen, that is not the final 5 round matchup of the evening. No, we still have your light heavyweight main event as the number 14th ranked Zhang Mingyang takes on the number 13th ranked Johnny Walker. That is right, the plus 285 Johnny Walker is the underdog against the Mounted Tiger, the minus 400 favorite Zhang Mingyang. Johnny Walker at number 13, 21-9 with 1 no contest. The number 14th ranked Zhang Mingyang, 19-6. 6'6 to 6'2, 4 inches in height for Johnny Walker, and a notable 7 inches in reach, 82 inches, 75 orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Johnny Walker has a big sizable advantage here, but will he bring the power punching with him? We'll have to see. Johnny Walker is 33 years old, born in Brazil, but now fights out of England and also fights out of SBG Ireland. That is right, the same gym as Kiefer Crosby and Conor Conor McGregor. Of his 21 wins, he has 19 finishes, 16 KOs, and 3 subs. Of his 9 defeats, he's been finished 7 times, 6 by KO, and once by submission. So that's right, this boy literally never goes the distance. That's one of the rarest things you will ever see from Johnny Walker. He was originally supposed to fight Bogdan Guskov in this year, earlier this year in January at UFC 311, and he pulled out. He was then supposed to fight Azamat Mirzakhanov at UFC 316 in June, and he pulled out. So let's hope he doesn't pull out here, as the last time he fought was June of 2024, where he was knocked out cold by Volkan Ozdemir. Before that, last time he fought, he had been knocked out cold by Magomed Ankalaev. Before that, he had had a no contest against Magomed Ankalaev. His last win, May of 2023, was against Anthony Smith. So Johnny Walker hasn't really been the same as of late. You know, this was at one point the guy who was supposed to be John Jones before Corey Anderson humbled him in 2 minutes. He would then lose to Nikita Krylov before bouncing back against Ryan Spann in 2020. Then drops a boring 5-round decision to Thiago Santos, is absolutely meme, knocked out by Jamahal Hill, goes on a little 3-fight winning streak, but that was over Ian Kudalaba, Paul Craig, and Anthony Smith. And as we said, he's currently on a 2-fight losing streak, 3-fight losing streak, if you will, as well. Johnny Walker does always have a puncher's chance. He can always turn back the clock, but yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially when he takes on just the absolute menace that is Zhang Mingyang. 27 years young, from Shandong, China. He is on a 12-fight winning streak. He has 13 KOs and 6 subs of his 19 victories, which if you can do middle school math, even preschool math, he has a 100% finish rate. Now, of his 6 defeats, he has been finished 5 times, twice by knockout, 3 by subs, so not too bad. Fun fact, 2018 was the last time he left round 1. That is right, this man has not left round 1. Since 2018. He has also not lost a fight since 2018. This guy is insane. All of his finishes have came in round 1 as well. He's 3-0 in the UFC, all round 1 knockouts, all performance bonuses. He's beaten Brenson Ribeiro. He's beaten Nazi Diaz, and he retired Anthony Smith earlier this year in Kansas City in April. My goodness, this man is scary. This man is scary, and look, I hate to go with the mainstream media, but Zhang Mingyang round 1 knockout. You know, you pick it till it's broke, and as literally as we've seen so far, as history says, Zhang Mingyang has just not lost in so long. He's in China. This is a big opportunity for him, but this is also a massive opportunity for Johnny Walker. I think this is much more of a winnable fight than Azamat Mirzakhanov and Bogdan Guskov was, and that's saying a lot, especially against the guy of Zhang Mingyang. So Johnny Walker fans out there, do not dismay. He can still win this. It just might be impossible, but it's not improbable. Actually, I think I said that backwards. It's improbable. It's not impossible. So Johnny Walker, I wish you the best of luck, but I am going with Zhang Mingyang to not only win, but kind of take over, you know, over the next few fights he has. I think they're going to really try and beef him up, especially if he wins, giving him Nikita Krylov, giving him Volkan Ozdemir, giving him Jamahal Hill. They're going to try and get Zhang Mingyang to be the next Chinese star, because as of right now, you know, obviously you have Song Yedong, but the fact we couldn't get him on this card really depresses me. Obviously, Rong Zhu, Yizha, Zhao Long, they just aren't really there. You know, Sumadarji, he's just not really on that level. Mahashat. So, if they can get a star out of Zhang Mingyang, they're definitely going to try to do so. So, yeah, but UFC Shanghai should be a fun time. I'm unfortunately going to be asleep when the prelims are going on. That's because I don't get off work till 11. Probably won't get home till midnight. Going to need to go right to bed, especially if I want to be up at, you know, the crack of dawn to watch these fights. So, we'll have to see, but a lot of fun times on the podcast today, guys. Make sure to go watch Beautiful Boy. It is such a beautiful film. Also, make sure to check in with Dan West Contender Series every single week. We predict every episode. We recap every episode. And same for the UFC. Lots of fun times, guys. So if you guys have anything else you want me to talk about in the future, please let me know. I am an open book. And you know what? I'll see you next time, guys. You know, we always got fun stuff coming at you on the episodes every single week. 2 a week. If not, usually there's just not a UFC event. So, guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jeb Podcast.